Tim, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today. I know it's a very busy day for you. We saw Todd as well, front and center, him and Heidi making the announcement this morning of the Kraken. And I'm watching Todd talking from the lower bowl, and I'm watching this team sort of hit a lot of, if not all of the right notes. And, you know, before we get going, I know you're not one to take bows before it's your time, but everything seems to be going according to plan and according to schedule. No fumbles so far. It's looking good for Seattle.
Well, we haven't dropped the puck yet, so there's plenty of time for us to screw this up. I think, look, there are two or three things that we were just very fortunate. Number one, hard to believe that the 12th largest marketplace in North America was sitting there without a winter sports franchise. And so the issue was always the arena. And when we began to figure out how to do something pretty legendary and historic from an engineering standpoint at the arena, that gave us the opportunity to go find a winter sports franchise. And fortunate enough, it was hockey. I always thought Seattle acted a lot more like a Canadian city than a U.S. city. And it felt a lot to me like a Toronto and a Vancouver kind of vibe in that city. So we knew it would do extremely well. We were lucky to find David Bonderman and Jerry Bruckheimer, and they had enough guts to pay a record amount for an NHL franchise. And to Gary Bettman's credit, Gary was very driven at trying to do Seattle and do Seattle the right way. So we got lucky in the marketplace. We got really lucky with David Bonderman and Jerry Bruckheimer as the partners there. And then snatching Todd out of the NFL as the number two executive and convincing him to go back to Seattle and lead the charge, I think, was really, again, just pure luck that he was interested. He wanted to jump back into hockey, and he had a passion for Seattle. So all that came together. He's done a great job at diversity. I think getting Ron Francis as the president of Hockey Ops was a stroke of brilliance. I think having 70,000 people buy season tickets can make a lot of people look smart. And so, look, there are a lot of really good encouraging signs in Seattle. I actually think Seattle is going to help to a large extent not only establish a new high watermark for the way we should look at the National Hockey League and how valuable these assets can be and how to operate the business side of a team. But the arena is going to be a very dramatic moment for this league, for the fans, and for the teams that go in there and play. They're going to look around at this arena, and it is an extraordinary experience because of how tight that bowl is going to be. So I told Gary Bettman yesterday, I actually think he's having the best run he's had as commissioner with the new collective bargaining agreement with Seattle and the way that franchise is being introduced and being brought into the league with certainty that we now have as a league, hopefully the new distribution rights. I think this is a good time to be in the National Hockey League, and I think Seattle is going to help set an even higher mark and a higher bar. And I think Todd and Bondo and the group there are doing a hell of a job as to trying to make the right decisions.
Berkey?
Hey, Tim, how are you? Thanks for doing this.
Berkey, I miss you, my friend. I hope you're well.
All right, I'm going to waste about 30 seconds here and show people how old you and I both are and how humble our beginnings were.
Why would that take you 30 seconds?
Back to 1985 when you were general manager of the Kansas City Comets in the Major Indoor Soccer League, and I negotiated a contract with you for a midfielder named Jorge Espinoza.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. You know what, Berkey? It's funny. You and I have followed each other's paths and careers for about almost 40 years now. And that either shows that you and I can't make the right decisions on any job that we ultimately take on, or our paths are aligned. I can't figure out which one.
Well, I think I'd trade bank accounts with you that much. I think it's true. So talk about the arena. Talk about the particular challenges of renovating this arena without touching the external parts of the building.
So this comes on the heels of the announcement yesterday with the Islanders, where we're partners with them on the new arena. And ironically, we have two very unique different challenges here, but both within the National Hockey League. So you have the Islanders that have wandered around the desert for 30 years without finding a home. Shockingly, if you think about this, they're the only franchise in the National Hockey League without a home. They're one of the few sports franchises in all of North America without a home, and now we finally have figured out how to privatize that and get that done. Seattle was exactly the opposite with the same solution. So the reason no one ever figured out a way to make Seattle work for the NBA is the arena. And the reason that the NHL never went there before was the arena. So everyone was running around trying to figure out how to build a new arena in Seattle. But the unique part of that marketplace is it's a hard thing to develop new buildings there. They're very green. They're very conscientious about development. Quite frankly, there's a very large anti-development part of that city that kind of likes to shoot at things. I call them cave people, citizens against virtually everything. So with Seattle, the real breakthrough came with saying, let's just use the existing arena. Now, sounds great, except for one thing. It was built back in 1962, and there's a reason the Sonics left, because that arena doesn't work. So what we did is we found the smartest engineers, and in particular, a guy named Chris Carver at Populous, who's designed most of my arenas that I've built. Chris came along and said, let's pick the roof up. Let's suspend it in midair. Let's then go build an 850,000-square-foot brand-new arena, and then let's drop the roof back on. From an engineering standpoint, it sounded great, but it was really a near impossibility, and almost everybody ran away from it except for Mortensen, our contractor, and said, I think we could do that. It's more expensive than you think, and we're at about $1.1 billion all in to get it done. But then we also had Federal Historic Landmark Commission, State Historic Landmark Commission, and Seattle City Landmark Commission. So we ended up making it a historic landmark in all three sectors. We got historic taxes. We literally went to the United States Congress and reintroduced the historic tax credit bill and got it passed in the Senate, got it passed in the House, and got it approved by the White House. So we had to introduce special legislation to get this arena built. We had to then win the day with the city council. We had to figure out engineers and architects that knew how to go build this darn thing. And all of that was done without us having a guarantee we were going to get a hockey team. But Gary knew we were sitting on maybe one of the greatest marketplaces in expansion history. And sure enough, when we put the season tickets on sale that day, the vision that we figured out on how to keep that roof and how to honor the 1962 World's Fair and how to make it a historic landmark and work within what most people would run away from got us to a point where we're sitting here today sitting on what will end up being one of the most valuable winter sports franchises in all of sports.
God, I wish I'd been a lawyer on your staff for all that.
Yeah, I know. Well, it took about six of them to keep me out of trouble, Berkey.
Our guest is Tim Lywicki from the Oakview Group. Go ahead, Justin.
Tim, thanks a lot for joining us. That sounds absurdly complex, and kudos to you guys for getting that done. The next thing is, so you take all those steps and make it happen, and now the arena is branded from Amazon as Climate Pledge Arena. I believe, maybe this is overstating, a zero carbon footprint. Explain exactly what Carbon Pledge Arena means.
So, again, the other thing I'll compliment my brother on is we've been pretty revolutionary on the way to build this thing. Again, you guys have been around the National Hockey League and the National Basketball Association. So what you do is Berkey and I get to inherit problems. So what we do is we try to reinvent franchises, reinvent brands, and reinvent culture. And I've spent an awful lot of time doing a lot of reinvention. But in Seattle, brand new. So everything's new. Every decision, every view, every entrepreneurial decision made, it's new. And so I think when we talked about naming the building, the one thing we kept on pushing towards is probably the crisis of our generation. We have temporary crises, certainly coronavirus and social injustice are two of the issues we're dealing with. But maybe the biggest issue we have within our world is the planet. And so to Jeff Bezos's credit, he wanted to do something with Climate Pledge. We wanted to create the first carbon neutral building. So literally we will not affect the earth. We have zero carbon emission either through the way we operate the building, the way we build the building, or the way that we use energy. Now, the problem was when we made that decision, we had to go back and redo the design of the building, even though we were halfway through the construction of the building. So we had to pull out all the gas. Now, there's not a building or a stadium anywhere in North America that doesn't use gas. It's our building included. So we had to tear out the pipelines, redo our electrical plant, add two new electrical plants, tie into the solar panel farm that Amazon's created up in Seattle, and rethink the way that we ultimately bring energy into the building. But it also meant we had to rethink about cooking. So we had to rethink about all of our concession stands and our commissary and our back of house kitchen. So it was pretty exhaustive. And then on top of it, we started tackling single-use plastic. And that is a massive issue for our environment. And if you think about going into a sports facility, we all use straws and cups, and we all use plates, and we all are wrapped in plastic. So we've had to reinvent all of that thinking and how we're ultimately going to service the customer. But it also meant we had to go back to our soft drink partner and our malt beverage partner and say, we don't want to use plastic bottles. And they came back and said, well, what, you want us to kind of take our entire plant process on how we package every one of our beers or every one of our soft drinks, and you want us to reinvent our plants in order to service your building? To the credit of both, they did. So they escalated their timeline on how to get out of plastic bottles. And within a year of opening our building, we will literally not use any plastic bottles for soft drink or beer in the building, because both of them committed to taking 4 years off their turnaround to get to a point where they weren't manufacturing with plastic bottles. So we changed industries and timelines on that decision. And that, again, was Bezos. He really pressed us hard to try to do something no one's ever been able to pull off before.
You know, this is such a, at every single level, and we only have a couple of minutes here, but I wanted to ask you something about tradition, because at every single level, this is a forward-thinking, progressive, let's do something new, let's change things type organization. I've always made the point, and I think I'm in the minority specifically in hockey on this, that tradition is nothing more than peer pressure from dead people. But to that, is there anything that your group, Tim, considers sacred?
That can say that again, considers what?
That you consider sacred. Something, yeah, that you, so, something you consider sacred, that, no, we're not going to touch this. This has to stay the same.
So I think a lot of that is, look, having a Hall of Famer like Ron Francis teaches about culture. There's a lot of sacred things that we're going to design into the way we build our locker rooms or our training center, about the history of, we spent more time going back and look at the Metropolitans and the fact they won the Stanley Cup back in, I think it was 1918 and 1919, and they got suspended in 1917. So we spent a lot of time looking at that history and tradition. I won't spill all the beans, but I'll tell you, there is a third and fourth jersey coming that eventually will honor that legacy and that tradition. To me, the greatest thing about hockey is tradition. The greatest thing about hockey is this unwritten rule and culture between players and teams, and the way that we ultimately go out and compete against each other. And so we've spent a lot of time trying to think about that history and that tradition, but Kraken's is a pretty good example. That's not a traditional name. And it was highly debated within the organization for 2 years about, do we go with tradition, i.e. Metropolitans, or do you go with something new? I think that's the challenge, right? When you start something new, you want to have tradition and history to build upon, but you want to think about the next century and how we ultimately create new traditions and new history and new ideas that are going to be more relevant in the next 50 years than maybe the past 50 years. It's a mix.
This has been a lot of fun and really informative. It's a wonderful day for Seattle. Congratulations to all the organizations involved in putting all this together. And Tim, thanks for being very generous with your time. I know it's a very busy time for you. Yeah. Thanks so much for stopping
by. Nice to catch up. And by the way, Berkey, I couldn't afford you as my lawyer for all of this stuff to begin with. So anyway,
it sounds like a lawyer. Offer, it sounds like a lawyer's dream. This whole project. Good Lord.
Yeah. You guys stay safe up there and enjoy the bubble.